Welcome back to Bibliosinensis.
Welcome back indeed.
My gosh, it's been months. Has it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has. It's been it really has.
Yes. This year has been quite the doozy. I think the world woke up and suddenly the sleeping giant started walking.
Yep. I can barely keep up with myself these days. How is everybody?
I hope everyone's doing okay.
Yeah.
I know that this year has actually shown the complete separation between the avid readers and the casual readers.
Right.
Yeah. I know that a lot of us have actually gone back to work, and others just want to, like, leave the household. Being that, you actually got to have a wonderful treat these past few months.
Oh, yes. More markets.
Yes.
We've been doing a few more markets. We were really successful at the Sip and Shop soiree this time around. I really love just meeting everybody, people that I knew, people that have been following T Spectral for a while now, actually stopped by. Camera from Mentality actually came by, and I haven't heard from them since, what, 3 years ago?
Yes.
So it was incredible to just check in with her. She actually works professionally on a mental podcast now.
Oh.
So that's incredible, and yeah, it's just nice to hear how everyone's doing, how things are changing.
Yes.
And I think this is really the year of just making things happen.
Yes. It's preoccupied our time, needless to say.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, the artisan markets have been wonderful. Our online, I guess, business has actually boomed.
Yeah, actually, it's boomed to the point where I have an assistant now.
Yes.
And it has completely taken over as a full-time job for me, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it's going to last. I'm not going to jinx it. I'm just going to knock on some wood right now. But yeah, it's just been, it's been a wild ride, and I feel like I'm finally getting used to it.
That's good. And due to that, because of the success of T Spectral, you were interviewed.
Yeah, talk about a full circle. I was actually featured in World T News. And the story goes that Aaron, who's the chief editor of World T News, actually found me because he watches It's a Charming Life and then bought the tins and then was like super curious of the marketing we had. So I was questioned on basically my business plan that happened several years ago, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And before the article, I mean, we can get further down the line into it, but it was just nice to meet another fellow tea addict. Yes. I wouldn't call it an addict, but just someone who's actually created a profession around the tea industry.
You guys kind of started at the same exact time.
We did, but we can get further into that after we have a cuppa.
Oh, yes.
I'd like to pour this cup.
Which cuppa is this?
So, in the article, I'm holding a green and brown canister, and this is actually our current blend that I made for the fall, but it's moving into the winter, and this is called Adderstone. Okay. And I absolutely love this tea. I know I say that about every tea, probably, but I think this one really pushed me in terms of ingredients.
Yes.
So I love it. And I just love to share it with all of you.
And for those that don't know what an Adderstone is, it's this beautiful rock, or rocks, I should say.
It's also known as a witch's stone or a hag's stone.
Yes. They basically have a hole in the middle.
Yeah.
And for some reason, it actually is seen as a magical item.
So the way that these stones are created is they actually have to tumble in the ocean. I don't exactly know the process. I don't know if it's just the ebb and flow of the water or have you, but basically it erodes a hole in the middle of these stones. And they can be found, I think they're most popularly found at the Baltic Sea.
Yes.
Which is one of the reasons why I started naming it that, because I've been tracing down like more of my European heritage lately.
Yes.
And then I got fascinated with Baltic amber, went on a crazy trip with that, and then I discovered these stones, and I was just transfixed by them. I think the most famous witch's stone is actually Coraline's stone.
Ah, yes.
So if you've watched the movie, hers is actually made out of malachite, which is what inspired the band and why there's a green band on the packaging of this. Because I wanted a nod to Coraline. There you go, Mr. Gaiman Attic.
Yes. a little trivia for those that are actually Star Trek addicts. That giant stone that they tend to time travel with in the first generation of Star Trek, that's an Adder stone.
Wait, so it's like a jumbo stone?
Yes, it's a jumbo Adder stone. And...
Huh.
It's really cute. A lot of people actually, you know, nod to that episode because the stone talks.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So it's kind of like a Power Rangers Zordon moment.
I guess so. But with just Kirk and Spock.
Is it snarky or?
No. It sounds benevolent.
Oh,
you know, okay. It could narrate your life practically.
Okay. So you wouldn't want to cross a stone like that.
No, you would not.
Okay. Well, Adderstone is actually a classic black tea, but it's got like a toffee base, toffee and apple, but it has apple pieces in it as well, but I added some more rustic elements to it. I have barley, and I have turmeric and carrot pieces in it. So I know that the minute I made it, I was going bouncing back and forth with names, and I kind of wanted to just name it Bonfire, then it got named into, like, Fox, like Guy Fawkes Day, and Fox the Phoenix, and Harry Potter, so that was bouncing around for a while, and I was like, you know, I want something that kind of encapsulates the, I guess, the mysticness of the change of fall. I know we have sweater weather, and I didn't want to take away from that, but I wanted kind of more of the wily side of fall and the changing of seasons, like Samhain and just like Celtic practices and bonfires and,
okay,
you know, like just the idea of reflection and the veil closing or thinning.
Yes.
So I wanted to create like kind of like a wild tea flavor.
I'm curious. I know that they mention it in that show, the one where they like the woman actually travels to, you know, ancient Scotland.
Oh, Outlander.
Yeah, Outlander, and they mention it as they pronounce it as Samhain.
Samhain or Samhain? I know that there's different pronunciations.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But that's how this tea was created. Some inspiration I can mention is, my mother actually drinks, what's it called, turmeric religiously.
Yes.
So it definitely is a flavor that reminds me of home. I also think that the element of turmeric almost has like a more rustier flavor to Earl Grey.
Ah.
It's got that like, kind of that smoky, rooted flavor,
okay,
that people like in the Earl, in bergamot. And then actually the barley was an idea because, I'm sure those of you who have been following the podcast know that I used to be a teacher. And one of my private students at one point was obsessed with, what's called buracha, which is Korean barley drink. And
yeah,
it reminds me of when it gets cold here in LA or just in general, soon tofu is a thing.
Mm, yes.
And there's this dish which I can, like, some places serve it, some don't, but it's called scorch rice, where they basically take a a classic clay pot and they make the actual rice in it so the bottom gets burnt.
Yeah.
And that stuff is like solid gold. but basically you get almost this like crunchy finish on the edge, on the bottom of your rice. And then what they do is they pour the barley tea into it.
Yes.
And it creates a soup for you. And it's a very umami flavor because it's roasted barley and scorched rice.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely amazing. But they also drink it religiously as like a tea, like kind of a palate cleanser. And yeah, I just, when I was building like what's a good rustic flavor, I threw that in. And then it just made sense to add in the carrot and the apple base. Mm. So just to give it a little bit of a sweet nod to pull all the flavors in, I added the toffee. Because who doesn't like caramel apples?
Yes.
I know pumpkin spice is everything, but sometimes, like for me, I just love apples. I mean, we always go to Oak Glen.
Yes.
We always try to look for cider this time of year. I don't know if any of you are into simmer pots. I know that they've recently become popular online for some reason, but I've been doing simmer pots for years.
Yeah.
And you're definitely going to put some apple slices or cider in there.
Yes.
So I just feel like this tea just represents that like wily aspect and that like cozy but wily aspect of fall that's not typical media fall.
Yes. Oh yes. Yeah.
And it ties into Christmas too, definitely colder weather in general. So if you're looking for a rustic cozy tea that doesn't have all the commercial flavors that you usually get, try Adderstone. Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
I mean, what did you first pick when I made this tea?
I know that the apple always, like, you know,
gets you.
Yeah, it hits you the best in this one. The thing that threw me off was a carrot, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, when I think of tea, I don't think of carrots.
Yeah. You
know? I mean, I think of juice.
You yeah.
Know, going to the gym and actually enjoying that.
I love carrot juice.
Yes. But it's a lovely flavor and it calms you down.
It's a very, like, if you're not into, like, commercially, like, super flavored teas, I know that Tea Spectral's really good about not over flavoring their teas, which is why people like our blends, because the leaf really shows through.
Yes.
But this one in particular has more of that like classic tannin almost bite that a tea has, especially with the extra barley and the carrots rustic in it too. So.
Yes. Most definitely.
Yeah.
But speaking of which, I mean, like, it's given us some time to actually enjoy some books.
Yes.
And I know that in a world where, you know, busyness and just the hectic grind of the daily, you know, daily job, daily work, I don't know, you have to actually find a way to get away from it all.
Right.
And the easiest way, you know, obviously for us, is a book.
Yeah, I mean, how have your reading habits been lately? Because I know mine have changed a lot recently.
Audible?
Okay.
Audible has been my best friend.
There's no shame in that.
Yeah. I've gone back to Tom Ripley, and I'm going to be going through each one of the Tom Ripley books since, you know, our audience has actually recommended it, like, months ago.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'm enjoying the fact that some of the characters are actually much like the movie. And just, you know, just the read-through is just this, I guess, this fantastic vacation, it feels almost.
That's great.
Yeah. I know that it's a gay character, but the mannerisms of everybody, because it's you know, it's said like, what, 1920s, 1930s? I'm not sure. Like, I know they're a bunch of romantics. You know, they're not beatniks.
Mm-hmm.
But in the book, it sounds like they're beatniks. especially Tom Ripley, because in the movie, it's just a guy that just so happens to know how to, you know, take, I guess, somebody else's jacket and actually play the part, blah, blah, blah. But in this one, he literally is just living with a bunch of 20-year-olds, you know, all riffraffs, and they could barely make it out there. But they're living in an apartment. Sounds a little believable right now, mm-hmm. especially here
yeah.
in L.A.
Yeah.
And, yeah. That, and I know that Candace recommended, well, gave me a copy of Breath.
Yeah, that was really nice of her to send you a copy, so thank you so much, Candace. She always makes the best book gifts. I know for years I wanted the, what do you call it? The Dita Von Teese's coffee book.
Yes.
And I never told anyone. I mean, you knew, yes. but I kind of just gave up on it because I'm like, what am I going to have the time to get this thing?
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, Candace is like, hey, I watched this, I listened to this podcast, and it had this burlesque dancer person. And she just reminded me of you, and I'm sending you her book. And I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds interesting. And there and behold, she sends me the book. So thank you. I mean, it's cool. I think that's amazing about books is just how much they connect people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this book that she actually recommended is by James Nestor. Like, at first I thought, oh my gosh, it's my life. It's my life. You know, mm-hmm. the guy goes right ahead and talks about his journaling, about how to breathe through your mouth, through your nose, and just breathing problems, period, that happens, you know.
Well, we should explain that a little bit. So, if anyone's caught up on Eugene's slight nasal.
Yes.
Eugene grew up with a heavy smoking mom.
Yes.
That's unfortunately smoked during pregnancy.
Yeah.
And Eugene has polyps, and we, you know, they're harder to get rid of than, you know, they just grow back, basically.
Yes, they do.
You have to have these minor surgeries to remove them, but they're just always growing back. Fortunately, they're benign at the moment, but you've had them, like...
Years,
I think, like, a little into when I met you.
Yeah.
Like...
Which is really sad, because, like... Prior to that, the polyps weren't so bad.
Mm-hmm.
I would just have a lot of sinus.
Mm-hmm.
And if anything, I think martial arts kind of saved me with my breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would use techniques from, you know, kung fu or karate. And it would help. It would help me run faster if I needed to. It helped me, swim. Like, these things that people take for granted, you don't realize how disabled you feel when you can't do certain things because of breathing. Like, lifting a box. Like, I have to hold my breath to lift a box.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would have to exhale immensely before I take a run. You know? Just certain things. Just so that I could actually, like, look like I'm, you know, I'm doing exactly what you're supposed to do as a regular person.
I remember when you took a cycling class. And I was worried because you practically almost passed out.
Yeah.
But I just remember you telling me that, and I was like, man, I don't know whether I should encourage you to go back or not. But I think that's when I really knew that there was going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Because I know that your energy and your stamina could handle more, but your body, your breathing just couldn't.
Exactly. Exactly. Which is really sad, because I used to be a linebacker.
Hmm.
You know? But, again, I used martial arts. You hold your breath, and suddenly you could almost push anything.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't be able to feel the pain until you actually exhale.
Right.
So, anyways.
Anyways, yeah.
What other books have you been reading?
So, I feel like we've almost switched habits, because I'm currently in between, I want to say, 3 or 4 books.
Yeah.
But I've started to just read a little bit each day. So I have this one really campy book that I absolutely love, which is called The Self-Care for the Pisces.
Mm.
And you've probably seen these if you've gone to any, like, bookshop recently. They're, like, the super pretty, shiny one. They have one for each zodiac, but apparently they were written based on, like, this famous astrologist. It's not necessarily the self-care aspect of it that makes me intrigued.
Yeah.
It's like the mannerisms and the things that those, I guess, those astrology signs like.
Yeah.
And it's kind of eerie how spot on they are. Like, just little things like, oh, I'm a Pisces, so obviously I'm reading it. But, like, recently they were talking about how, like, desert climates are technically bad for that astrology sign because they need moisture in the air. And yeah. I never realized it, but I'm one of those sticklers that, you know me because you've been married to me, but I will, like, not just check the weather. I don't even care how hot or cold it is outside. I need to know the percentage of humidity in the weather. Mm. And I literally have skincare routine based on humidity and no humidity. It's insane, but I didn't realize how important that was to me until I read that. And yeah. like just little things, like they were even talking about like sleep habits and like foods you prefer, which honestly I hate to admit it, I think I'm a stereotypical Pisces in that sense.
Yeah.
They were even talking about like the type of plants we prefer. the type of activities. It's crazy. So that's like a little campy book that I just like read a couple pages out of.
Yeah.
I know it's supposed to be like you read one each week and then you get like a self-care tip and you do said self-care tip. But yeah. like in reality, I'm more curious of just the behaviorisms and the reasons why. Mm. So I've been reading that one. I've finally picked up again The Book of Lost Things by John Conley.
Oh.
And it was really fascinating. It's a little rough to get through.
Yeah.
I just finished Peter Pan and Scarlet, which again was another weird one that was hard to get through. I don't know why that's a trend lately for me.
Just hard to get through?
Hard to get through slightly sexist or racist books. Maybe it's yes. just when they were printed. And then just to top off that list, I'm reading Strange Pilgrims by Gabriel Marquez, which is his short stories. And good Lord, I never realized like the massive amount of sexism in books. And yeah. it's so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's like me with Arturo Perez Reverte, like... He was fun when I was in junior high. I didn't know any better. And there was a lot of female worshipping in that. And it really got, like, pretty sexist by, like, the third page. If not yeah. the second. You know, like, it's the stereotypical male author syndrome where they're like, and I saw this woman, and suddenly her physique is what's being told. Her sexuality is what's being told. Oh, Lord.
Like, for me, like, I guess I don't think it's a spoiler, but there's this one chapter I'm in because it's a series of short stories. And this woman's car breaks down in the countryside, so she finds a building and goes to use a phone. Typical horror story setup, right? She finds out it's basically like this American Horror Story type mental institute with like priests and nuns and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like all women. So she goes in to ask for the phone, and they think she's an inmate. And next thing you know it, she's locked up. And everyone thinks, oh, she's crazy. She has this story set up. But the one thing I hated is she finally got into her therapy session with the priest. And instead of talking about her just crying mournfully for being stuck in this prison, he compares it to her, like, confessing openness, like, she's never had with other lovers.
Yeah.
And I was just like, dude, I would be upset if I was stuck in a mental institute and nobody believed I was sane and my husband never came to pick me up.
Yes.
And I'm confessing to a priest and begging to use the phone after 2 months. I would be upset. And I can't believe that's the analogy he thought of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Little things like that. I know Peter Pan and Scarlet had the typical savage talk with the Native Americans. And Oh my God, I was just rolling my eyes all the way through it. It's such a charming book. I got to do the audio version, which was such a real treat, especially with around the time it was like Halloween and, you know, the Rocky Horror Picture Show was kind of making its rounds. I think they were doing an anniversary special on it.
Yeah.
So I accidentally stumbled across this audio version of it because I have been wanting to read the book for some time. For those of you who don't know, Peter Pan and Scarlet is the officially licensed sequel to Peter Pan.
Yes.
And I am a diehard Peter Pan person, like in terms of the book with J.M. Barrie. But so I've wanted to read it for quite some time. And I found out that Tim Curry did the audio version. So it was such a treat. And it was really good. He got to do all the voices. It was really charming. I loved it. But it really could have gone without the Native American connotations and the Braves and the... Ugh. What is that word? The S word. The, you know, what yes. you call women. And it was just so unnecessary.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the book at that point, and it really didn't need it.
Yes.
I think you could have cut all of that out, and it would have been great. So I guess there's a tip for you. If you ever want to read it or let your kids read it, just cut past that stuff. Yes. But it was a good read. Other than that, I wish I didn't have to live in a world of duality as such. But, yes. you know, I digress. And then I was recommended The Art of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo. I'm more intrigued about how it reads.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone's familiar with it by now. It's like pop hearsay at this point. Does it spark joy? And,
yeah.
you know, you see the Netflix version, but it's just incredible to read her book. And it almost reminds me of... like a colonial essayist.
Mm.
Almost like a Hamilton type essay.
Okay.
Just because she defends her reasons so well, and she's so well versed, and you can tell she's thought a heck of a lot about this, and why her method works. And I mean, if you're not gonna get it just because you want to clean your space, definitely get it, because it's definitely some fine essay writing for sure. Which I was not expecting when getting that book.
Huh.
So, reading through that. So those are all the, I hope I didn't throw out too much stuff.
Oh no.
But yeah, those are all the things I've been reading. Totally looking forward to finally reading Empire Falls.
Yes.
That's the next thing on my list. And yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of other books. I'm really trying to catch up on my reading. Oh, I'm also reading this book called Three Cups. And I thought it was a tea book, but it's actually a humanitarian book. And it's fascinating. It talks about a bunch of backpackers that decided to start a nonprofit school to do almost like, you know, like the fair trade education where the people get to work on fair trade farms.
Yes.
And then in turn, their children get education. So... it talks about just setting up schools yeah. in different countries. And I haven't quite gotten into that yet, but I thought that was fascinating.
There we go.
Yeah. I could keep going. I have a whole list, but really those are kind of the general things that are on my list right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of, you know, being well-read, I know that your editor actually got to pick your brain.
Yes.
And I don't want to go through the questions he's asked. I kind of want to know how you felt about the questions he did ask.
Oh, I could tell that it was going to be a challenge.
Really?
Yeah. When I got the questions, I kind of panicked a little. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
And even the way he wrote it, he replied to me. He's like, I know these are a lot of questions, and you don't have to answer all of them, but... here they are. And I was just like, no, 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 no. When a person takes the time to write all these questions, you do not insult them by not answering everything. So I literally took a whole day and a half and just incessantly wrote.
Okay. Did it feel awkward to actually write so much about your education in it, or did it feel more like you were actually talking about friends?
I wanted to write a little bit less about my education and more so over my journey in the industry because I'm a thorough believer that school is only the catalyst of a career. It's not what makes your career.
Yeah.
It's definitely a great way to base yourself on some solid foundation, but especially in America where we put so much, I guess, so much on a title.
Yes.
I don't think that's right. And yeah, I am a certified sommelier, but so what? I think my merit lies in over a decade of working in the industry. I think people don't really realize that. It's so cool to say, oh, I know a sommelier. I get that all the time. Like, oh, I mean, I know even the women's club, which I help a lot in South Pasadena, they're like, oh, Stephanie is our resident sommelier. And I'm like, does a women's club really need a resident tea sommelier? I guess not. But, you know, that's cool to say. But really, like, I believe that my strength comes from my decade of
Yeah.
just learning the industry. And I'm really damn proud about that. I am so proud of how hard I worked for that. And I did start at the ground up. I started answering phones and I started like creating logos for people and not getting paid for said logos in the
Yeah.
industry.
The curse of a graphic designer.
And I just remember brand strategy and helping people in what we would consider dark hours. I mean, when I talk about my experiences lightly on Tea Rose, and I just remember being with them when they changed locations, and a lot of people don't know this, but Pasadena, out of basically most of Southern California, is like the worst place to get permits. And unfortunately, we learned that the hard way. Basically, they will twist your arm and all permits are not approved in Pasadena. They actually ship them out to somewhere like Irvine in our situation. And then they get approved. But since they're not in the city of Irvine, we get the bottom priority. So a restaurant or any kind of food-related industry thing in Pasadena will literally sit on the shelf for almost a year, if not a year, and not open. So you have to consider basically how do you pay your rent for 9 months without opening your business? And I was there. I strategized with them. I was there the whole time, and it was some dark times, right? And man, I mean, those experiences now are just, they've taught me so much patience. And I'm so grateful for them. And they definitely did beyond what a piece of paper could have done and some classes. So I wanted to highlight that mainly in the article. And I think also I want a voice that of approachable nature in the tea industry. And that's something I talk about with my influencers all the time is how we want tea to be something accessible to people. And you can pick it up at any level. Like at one point, you could become that person that does like my favorite hobby, and you know this, is I love Darjeelings. And I love sampling Darjeelings, and I'll even sample like oolongs are also a big thing for me, specifically greener oolongs. And there's no wonder why they're called the queen of teas, because with that range of oxidization, you've got incredible amounts of flavors, like different, it could totally range. You could even have like the same plant roasted at a different oxidization and it'll come out a different flavor. But why don't I do that? It's because I want tea to be approachable to people. And it was great. It was absolutely wonderful. I think we were talking about that earlier, how Aaron approached me. I gave him a call. We finally touched base. I know it was on a weekend. So we kind of had like a little bit of a phone tag, an email tag. But we finally reached each other and it was really fun. I think we had like a long 45-minute talk. And I got to hear his experiences, and sure enough, he was like kind of like an overglorified gopher for the World Tea Expo 10 years ago, and he worked his way up just like I had. And I said, "Hey, man, I mean, you and me sound like we came from our same like base, so to speak, like the same time frame." And it's just fascinating
You
how
guys are
we've
practically classmates.
Yeah, and we kind of went in different parts of the field, and it was so cool to just talk back and forth and compare, you know? So I think also he based his questions on that conversation. We talked about a lot of things. We even brought up the whole tea snobbery thing, which, by the way, is one of their more heated articles right now.
Are they still going on with that?
A lot of people have very strong opinions about it. I'll tell you that. Like, it's had a couple of reply articles. I did not want to get off the phone without telling him how impactful and amazing that article was to me for someone who makes blended teas and who gets basically crap for it all the time. And look, you gotta know how to break the rules by knowing what the rules are. And that's why my certificate means something, is because I know how to break the rules because I've read the rules and I've played by the rules. It was just so fascinating. I don't know if I'm jumping back and forth, but literally I told him, "Yeah, your tea snobbery article was so amazing. I know that was a peer special. It wasn't written by him, but it was written by a professional." And I said it was just incredible. I'm glad you brought light to the situation. You know, I brought up Bibliosinensis. I told him how we talk about it lightly on our podcasts. And it's so cool that, you know, like there's other sources out there that now have a link to this sort of conversation. And I was like, man, you're doing the good work. Don't give up. And yeah, he ended up like just generally telling me he loves the fresh face of World Tea News right now, and it's a big opportunity, especially after COVID and how much it's impacted
Everybody.
the tea industry. I mean, I guess I'll touch on it lightly again. Like, I can safely say that like 75% of the industry is shot now. So if you survived and you're in the tea industry, congratulations, you survived.
Yay.
But that also means that at the World Tea Expo, there was a lot of space to be had. So a lot of people don't know this, but the World Tea Expo is also run by a company that does beverage specialties in general, like specifically cocktail. So they just fused the two conventions together. And there was a lot of mixed bag emotions about that. Like, the purists were like, this is an abomination, this is terrible. And then there are people like me that are like, yay, not only do we finally get to have the World Tea Expo again, but it's cool to see all these like hybrid fusions and new ways of presenting it. And I was explaining to him, like, look, part of my income comes from restaurant consulting. And I've been preaching for years how amazing it is to make tea mocktails and cocktails. And I know that Whole Foods just released their 2022 trend predictions, and they did mention that mocktails are going to be the new thing because everybody's tired of getting drunk from COVID at home. And I'm like, dude, we've been doing this forever, you know? And it's just cool that, you know, there's a forerunner in this. So, yeah, so I think he based a lot of his questions on that
Fact.
fact, on that conversation. And man, those were tough questions. I even had to call my tea broker and ask them, how do you want me to answer this, like without giving away our trade secrets? Because it was teetering on that. It was interesting. It was definitely an interesting, challenging article, but I felt like I didn't go through 10 years in the industry to shy away from this. So I took it by the horns, and I really loved it. I loved it so much. Not because I had the speaking stick, but it was just so nice to have a compiled interview. And of course, I mean, Lindsay and Jonas accommodated wonderfully,
Yes.
and they had a piece in the article too. And it was just, I don't know, it really felt like a milestone.
Okay. Well, that's lovely.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays we don't just have Hardee's, we don't just have Norwood writing about tea, you know. And a lot of these articles, they're introducing us to a lot of people that are changing the industry practically by the month.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, at this point, I think we're going to be expecting a lot of new books, new authors, and practically new students to this form of embitement.
Yes. So there's actually a new tea book that I want to get. I'll look it up later. But someone actually went through the nerd science of how tea brews and grows and why the temperatures are important and how the molecular structure changes because of it. And we've never had a book about that because us tea growers kind of know the process, but we don't have any like scientific fact understanding.
There is, it's just as boring.
No, but this guy like literally created like this nerdgasm sort of book based on it and what it does, like how it changes things. Basically the chemistry.
Okay, let me at least express that farmers are not writers. I think that's where I was trying to get at. Because, yes,
Okay.
it is interesting. It is interesting. But you get a farmer to actually speak his mind, and you tell me how eloquent the man would be.
Well,
He's better at farming.
I think it's more on you know what it does, but you don't know the scientific terms and exactly how things work.
Okay.
So to have like the actual science of what happens when you put hot water at this temperature to this leaf and so on and so forth.
That's
It's
so
fascinating.
interesting. 'Cause well,
It is.
actually, no, what I'm actually about to contest is that I think it's the other way around. Because, okay, just hear me out. My family has a farm in the Philippines. It's near a volcano. And no one is willing to actually be a farmer, you know, at least around that farm. But it would be amazing to actually have that kind of chemical balance, you know, grow things. It's practically exponential. You know, vegetation. The ordeal is a farmer actually needs to know his chemistry. You know, you can't just go right ahead and get a guy to just plow something and then say, oh yeah, he's a farmer and that's it. It's like, no, they really do actually understand the vegetation, they know how to deal with manures and everything. So, I don't know. I guess, like, if somebody could actually correct me here, I have never met an eloquent farmer. I've met an eloquent seller. I've met an eloquent concierge, sommelier. But a farmer, not so much.
I'm sure they're out there.
Okay.
Yeah. But new books,
Yes.
fascinating. Love them.
Yes.
Love this new energy in the industry right now. So honored to be a part of said industry.
Yes.
I don't know if people feel the same way as I do, but I really believe that articles are bookmarkers in our era.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people don't realize how important they are. And they're definitely a catalyst. So, very grateful, especially for such a reputable source as World Tea News. And it's really surreal because I've been following them since the beginning.
Yes.
And I also want to thank Jordan, who's, I hope he listens eventually to this, the other sommelier that got me my certification and vouched for me. I know I mentioned anonymously
Yes.
in the in the article, but yeah, if it wasn't for him sponsoring me, I don't know if I'd be here.
Yeah, he was like, you guys were like
playmates. Two buddies. Yeah, we were.
You were like, have you tried this? No. Have you tried this? No. Have you tried this? And you guys would just be like tasting all the time. Yes.
So I think my favorite memory is I was in the middle of trying to design a tea blend. And I asked him for licorice root. And he never knew what the heck it was. So he checked with the factory, got back to me, and got some licorice root. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to confess to you. I tried it. And he's like, it literally is the tea that my grandmother used to make me with milk. Just licorice root and milk. And that's what my grandmother would give me before bed when I would stay over at her house. And it was such a powerful connection for me. Because I'm like, man, can you imagine, like, being surrounded by that much tea? Because he, like, worked in the tea industry.
Yeah.
Like, imagine being surrounded by, like, over 500 blends and all of a sudden, this tea you never heard of, it's just, like, basic licorice root, and all of a sudden, like, it unlocks a memory like that. And that just gives me goosebumps. I love that stuff. This is why I do tea blends. It just, it's such a power, like, taste and smell and everything, which I think I mentioned at the end of my article, is tea is a beautiful thing because it uses all your senses at once.
Yes.
And that kind of powerful memory unlock right there is just fantastic to me. And it's so cool to be a part of that. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
But thank you, Jordan. You crazy dude.
Ah, it's lovely. Speaking of which, I know that being, I guess, like, at home, working at home, mm-hmm. we've practically been... Oh, is this seeking out new books, new authors? Do you have anything in your to-read list at this point?
I'm actually looking at it right now. It's right below your Breathe book.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever gotten a book out of those tiny libraries? Mm. You know the ones I'm talking about? Yeah, in front yards? Yeah. And they're registered?
They look like they're mailboxes, but it's a little house of books.
So there's this book in front of me, and it's by Knopf, and it's by a Marcy.
No, Maeve.
Maeve Binley, and it's called Chestnut Street. But what intrigued me so much about it is it had a really beaten up dust jacket.
Yeah.
And it looked love. It was like, it wasn't even its original dust jacket. It literally looked like a textbook. It was covered in contact paper. Took it out, was super intrigued by the thing, opened it, and realized it's like a 1960s publication. And I'm like, you know what? I always take a chance on these books because most of these don't have ISBNs and most of them are forgotten literature. So that's been on my list. I haven't checked if you can check it out in other forms of medium, but I've been holding on to it. Yeah, that's on my list. I'm definitely trying to get back into, I want to finish the Redwall series. That's been on my mind a lot lately, especially, by the way, congratulations to the Redwall team for releasing the first MMORPG.
Yes.
It looks incredible. I follow you guys religiously. It's really great. So thank you for making that universe touchable for people, especially since Jakus is no longer with us.
Yes.
How unfortunate. Sometimes I feel so sad that I live in a world where there's no more Pratchett or these people.
Yeah.
Like, do you ever get taken back?
I do. I know that's why I'm, like, celebrating gaming as much as I can.
Or else.
Or else.
Did I tell you the story about that author that... Mm. Oh my god, what was his last name? I know it was John something. Okay, so he's famous for writing a lot of the scripts on Star Trek, the original 1960s.
Ah, yes.
And I think I've talked about it before here, but a lot of the old sci-fi scriptwriters started working in this series called Lyavec.
Yes.
And he created this amazing world, which, I mean, I guess explain... Imagine if Diagon Alley was more dark magic.
Yeah.
And wild, more like wild magic. There were less rules to it. I guess, like, imagine Diagon Alley, like, 200 years in the past. And that's pretty much this world. Absolutely loved it. Literally could have seen him the one Comic Con I went. Aww. Missed his panel. He died the next year. I am like, oof. I still regret that.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah, but amazing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Ironically, I've actually been looking at my old Ozessa to read list.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping to actually read a curable romantic.
Really? I was about to donate that book.
You did.
I didn't. I still have it.
No!
It's like right there.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. It totally is.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll dig.
If not, I do have the audio as well. Yes. So the book premise is Freud is trying to cure a person of his nightmares, but finds out that he actually slightly has a crush on person.
Okay.
Is that the better way to explain the plot?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. All I know is I thought it was a funny premise.
Mm-hmm.
And when I opened the book, just like Keats, my heart just beat and I lost my breath. And I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
I want to be more.
Okay then.
So, yeah. Yeah. I think between the two of us, like, I feel like I'm, like, more of the feminine reader. Like, not feminine reader, more emotional reader.
Yeah,
I can see that. Emotional. I'm sorry, I don't mean to actually...
No, you're good.
...type here, but...
Let's see. Well, speaking of that sort of emotion, I think I'm going to finally finish the last book out of the Guinevere series.
Ooh, okay.
I have one last book from Rosalind Miles. And then I'm done with that trilogy.
All right.
And then, what else is there? Oh, I have a Susanna Clarke sitting on my shelf right now.
Yeah. And didn't Savon actually come out with a new book?
Yes! What the heck? I mean, I guess it was a quarantine thing, but he wrote this giant encyclopedia of a book for the rest of the series of the Cemetery of Forgotten Books line, which we all thought was done. So that's definitely on my list. It's sitting... It's just waiting. I even saw the audio of it. It's a 22-hour read, man.
Mm.
It's big.
Right.
She's thick. yeah.
Okay.
Any plans for the new year?
Plans for the new year? Well, to be quite honest, I'm still trying to get a grasp of how to live this new lifestyle that LA is.
Yep.
You know, it feels like we're living in Argentina, but it's slowly going back to the way
yes,
LA used to be.
The inflation is slightly intense right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, $5 for gas, and then...
And then, what was your...
Chinatown
the average parking's like $35.
Okay, that's because I keep working at, like, these professional areas where they demand that I actually
pay. But it's insane. And then I know that we were complaining because I think eating at, like, a pho restaurant is almost the same price as a Cheesecake Factory.
It
right
is
now.
The same price as eating a Cheesecake
Factory. It's ridiculous.
Come on.
But, yeah, everything's slowly, I guess...
It's dwindling
it's getting
down
better, yeah, but it's still bad. Crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. So, I know that a lot of people haven't actually had time to read, or rather, the avid readers just didn't see the difference. Mm-hmm. but the casual readers, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, definitely, I am not sitting back down in my couch, which I have been sitting at for the past year, and I want to go out to the beach to, you know, road trip, or travel or meet people, etc. And, you know, and some people, they just don't have the choice, you know? Like, yeah. A lot of these people that have, like, illnesses, they can't do that. Mm-hmm. And it's driven people nuts. And I'm just hoping that little by little, we can actually return to the way things were. Let the busyness, like, ensue. You know, I'm sure January is going to be crazy for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that it gives us an incentive to actually find a nook again and sit down
yes.
and read.
We were talking about this, which I think you'll see our next guest,
yes.
Brian. We were talking about how hard it is to find cafe culture right now.
Yes.
And if anyone has any recommendations, like, I'm not talking Starbucks. I'm talking about cozy nooks tucked away
at your cities.
With, you know, where you want to spend long periods of time reading and writing. Please let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be lovely.
We found a few, but they're far between now.
Well, it's very extreme. You're either, like, a college kid.
Yeah.
You know, trying to actually, like just cram and, like, get past the test.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's a diner, practically.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's no, like, cafe life anymore.
No.
I think. Or if it is, it's very rare.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. We've reverted back to, like, late 80s. You know, like when you would, like, everybody would go to a donut shop and have coffee there?
Well, I think with inflation, it's like, well, why would you spend your money on some frou-frou tea, I guess?
Because frou-frou tea is life?
Okay, we get it. But I'm saying, like, if you had a choice between a drive-thru meal, full meal,
right,
or coffee and a pastry... What would you choose?
Yeah.
Right? And nobody has time, especially with this whole, like, instant life we live.
You know, and the thing is, like, I'm meeting people that have never heard of a London fog. I'm like, you are in L.A., madam. You are an uncultured lout. How dare you?
Oh, my goodness.
You know? And I can't believe you work here.
That literally sounded like a Karen move. That was horrible of you.
But I accepted this lout's terrible piece of offering. And I paid for it. And I did not complain. There was no such thing as a manager. In fact,
did you pay tip? Because that's been my pet peeve lately is when they do such a bad job that you already paid for the tip. And I'm just like, oh, I don't know. This is insult. I get it. You need a living wage, but at the same time, you're doing such a bad job. I don't know if I want to continue this.
As a Slytherin trying to act like a Hufflepuff at these, like, you know, little joints, it's been a headache. But my snobbery has to actually step aside. Because my snobbery is in service. It's not in tea. Because obviously we're Americans. We don't know tea that well. We don't have our own tradition. Apart from, oh look, a mug. Let's put something in there.
Mugs have feelings too.
Fine, I'll pay for therapy.
Pay for the mug's therapy.
Yes, the mug will have therapy. But it has to admit that it actually has a problem. It can't just, like,
That's
sit
true.
There, okay?
Okay.
I've seen too many teenagers actually deal with therapists and
well,
act like
we're talking about mugs, not teenagers.
Yeah, but, you know, mugs have feelings too.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my goodness.
Well, on that note.
On that note.
I hope everyone is doing well. I know the holidays can be quite stressful. Thank you, everyone, that's been kind of responding to our quick live streams impromptu.
Yes.
I know we just did one with Ryan, and that was really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And charming. And for those of you that don't catch it when it's live, I mean, great response for those that see the videos after.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So, chin chin.
Chin chin.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everyone.